It's fascinating. I was talking to Owen today, and I wanted to share this with you. And it was an observation of mine, and I don't know if it goes anywhere, but what I find fascinating about the world of Chinese martial arts are two arts that you wouldn't necessarily put together in the same room, but have the most extremists. And that's Tai Chi and Wing Chun. And yeah. I find that the loudest yellers, the weirdest shit out there, you know, the no touch knockout from a different country kind of stuff. It's all of those too. And I found that to be very fascinating, where Wing Chun has some of the biggest blowhards out there, you know, pounding their fists. So, I mean, that just kind of fits right into it. But it was a weird observation to think that those two systems really yeah. seem to have, and don't get me wrong. I've got friends that do Southern Mantis. I've got friends that do Pak Mei, and goodness, do they have a dysfunctional family as well? You know, totally. to get them to sit down and have a cup of tea and agree on anything seems damn near impossible. So I think we have to find those like-minded people. And, you know, it's one of those things, like you were talking about your BJJ friends and your boxing friends. Forget what style. I want to know if they're a good coach. I want to know if they're a decent human being. I want to know if they're a pretty, you know, I can see their students and see their students executing whatever it is that they're teaching well. And I'm right. always fascinated about those high level teachers, which I consider you one of them, is I want to see, you know, forget the product. The product is Wing Chun, correct? But how is it being taught? I mentioned this to Sifu Peterson on our conversation that I was thrilled to have with him, is I think sometimes people forget, they're so focused on teaching the martial art that they're forgetting about being a good teacher, right. you know? And I don't know, just kind of some stuff there.
Yep.
Go ahead, Sifu. No.
No, I was going to say, you know, you're absolutely right about, you know, those kind of extremes. I think there are definitely some archetypes. And, you know, it's far be it from me to be like an armchair psychologist or whatever, but it also seems to come out of a deep satisfaction with what they themselves are doing. And also it belies an insecurity, because if I say that Bong Xiao, for example, should be applied a certain way, and then another Sifu goes and says, no, it should be done this way with a lot of power or whatever, and that's at odds with how I teach it, I don't understand why one would get triggered about it, because there's like this insecurity in messaging. Like, no, now I have to comment and tell that person, no, they're wrong, because they don't see things through my filter. And doesn't this person know that I'm in fact the central character of the universe? And it's always like, when you see that, it's like, well, I'm the central character of the universe. How dare you say Bong Xiao should be a hard block when it should be this kind of more absorbent kind of thing or whatever, if that's the way you look at it. And I go like, why does it get someone so bent out of shape that someone does something differently? Do they really expect the entire Wing Chun world to do everything exactly the same as them? Yeah. Is that actually a reasonable thing? And if in this hypothetical world, they could cleanse the ills of other Wing Chun styles, so every single style of Wing Chun completely aligned with theirs, do you really think that they're going to stop having conflict? No, they're going to find something else. That now that we're all unified and that there's only one true Wing Chun, now they're going to start being annoyed with how long it takes people to teach it, or this personality type or whatever. They're always going to find something to have conflict with, because I think they have a very deep dissatisfaction about what they themselves are doing. And it belies a severe insecurity to act as if the entire world must conform to one's worldview, because most people are solipsistic. They think they are the center character of the universe. And it's pretty absurd when you just sit back and go, yeah, that's clearly the problem that's going on here. It's the other person is not accepting the fact that you are the central character of the universe.
I think along those same lines, I was going to ask you, you know, as somebody who was practicing Wing Chun before social media, and now somebody who, you know, is participating in social media platforms, and then the level of acrimony, say, in just for example, in the Wing Chun community, I know in my own communities with Bagua or Xing Yi or internal martial arts, it's just as bad. Do you think that the acrimony has increased in intensity or changed, or is it just the, you know, the platforms gave of gave it a place to live and that everybody can be a part of or somewhere in between? Oh,
Jesus, that's a good question, Alex.
That is a really good question, because it's easy to see why one would think how much worse it is right now, because the accessibility to dumpster fire comments are, it's right there. If I want to see some haterade being thrown at any particular lineage, give me 15 seconds. I can go online and see it. If you wanted to see that in the 1980s, let's say, for example, the big controversy in the 1980s was William Cheung's claims that he had inherited some secret Wing Chun system that no one else had learned. At those times, if I wanted to read about that, I'd be like, oh, yeah, right, that William Cheung guy was saying this. Hold on a second. I got to go to my magazine collection over there. And wait, which issue was that in again?
Inside Kung Fu? Was it in?
Yeah, was it? Right. And then you would go there, right? it wasn't as accessible. I think the seed of that acrimony, of that kind of dissatisfaction with other people holding different opinions, was always there, but everything is just amplified. The one thing that is a little bit different is that, because in terms of marketing trends, traditional martial arts don't hold the same prestige that they did, let's say, in the 80s or 90s. So there's also, then you have this, you used to just have Wing Chun Lineage A or Kung Fu Lineage A fighting against, Kung Fu Lineage B. But now you have this third guy coming in who's like, yeah, it's all BS. You do MMA, I'm going to give you a load. And then so it's like you have a kind of third party interlocutor inserting themselves in there. So it's also to a certain degree dulled down some of the rhetoric from the Wing Chun styles, because they now know we have competition from a market which has kind of downplayed a lot of traditional martial arts. So it's the seed is still there. It's amplified a little bit, but it's also changed to a certain degree. It's much more individual. People tend not to like certain personalities online, and myself included. There are a lot of people who absolutely hate my guts, which means you must be doing something right.
That's correct.
And it's a lot less lineage based. You know what I mean? Like it was, in the 80s, I mean, to talk from my own lineage, it was the Lerington guys versus the William Cheung guys. Sure. And it was, this guy versus this guy. But it was always, it was much more tribal. And now it's much more individualistic, because everyone has a megaphone now that they would only have collectively in their tribes back in the days. Now they have it individually, right? So you even have people, screaming at people within their own lineage that they don't agree with, much more so than you would have had the ability to have in the 80s, right? You have people within the Lerington lineage who don't like other people within the Lerington lineage, but that was not amplified as much because they were all kind of coalescing, especially in the 80s, against William Cheung, right? So it's changed. But it is kind of hard to, to come back to your question that I don't want to feel like I was avoiding it. It does kind of feel like it's worse now. Like, I don't know. It does feel a little bit, but I think that every generation tends to catastrophize the current situation. There was recently I saw a video. They were interviewing students in the late 60s. What do you think about the future? What do you think is going on? And when you listen to them, how bleak the future looked, it sounded exactly like what people are saying nowadays. And then you would go back, you'd be like, yeah, well, you still have the oil crisis, a few wars. But I mean, the 70s were kind of a cool time and the 80s were totally crazy. But they thought it was like doomsday in the late 60s. Sure. And then so
we're not going to make it.
You were not going to make it. So I have a feeling that it's difficult to have perspective on this because we don't have hindsight. We can sound like philosophers about what happened 20 years ago, but we cannot about what's going on in our current situation. And I think that we tend to view it through a much more catastrophic lens than it actually is. Who knows, 10 or 20 years from now, we might be like, oh, man, back in the early 2020s, man, those were the times when everyone was getting long, So it's difficult because I think we are very poor judges of our current predicament. I think it's going to take some time to see whether this current era was really worse than, say, the mid 80s with, like, especially the, not to kind of harp on the same thing, but the William Chen Leung-Ting thing, for example, or in the 90s with kind of the letters that were going back and forth between different Sifus, or the pre-social media internet days of the forums and the chat groups.
Oh, they're still out there. They're still out there, full of garbage, full of hot nonsense.
Yeah, so those were, because I used to lurk on those things all the time, whether it was the Kung Fu Tai Chi magazine had a big one, which they had a big Wing Chun page. There were even the VTAA had one. And like, I remember going there and it was just vitriol. So if you would have asked me back then, I would be like, I don't think it can be any worse than now. So I think I'm a bit agnostic. I think we're always going to feel like our current predicament is absolute dog shit. and then you're going to have fondness for it in hindsight. Like, look at when you recall back to in your past, and you recall of how fondly, you know, when you were a teenager, perhaps not everyone, like, oh man, those were great. And the friends that I had and the places that I did, and I didn't have a care in the world. But when you go back to yourself at that time, if you can go back there, you had stresses, you had things you were freaking out about as a teenager, you're growing, this awkward stuff, relationship, dealing with your parents and friends and grad, like, and then you would be like, no, this was an awful time. But you look at it back now and you go, oh man, if I only, you know, like, I had no stresses back then. Yeah, but that would be knowing what you know now back then, and you never know now what you know later. So I think it is a perpetual problem of not realizing that the only moment we live in is the current one. And we're constantly putting and projecting a future that doesn't exist yet, and a past, which is a reconstruction of actual events. And it's kind of a further recognition that we need to be a little bit more present in this moment, because it is all we have. And it's the only thing we can be somewhat clear about.
Excellent. Thank you.
Sure.
Ooh, Zen Master Alex, that was pretty bitchin'. How did you become a writer? What was the catalyst for you to start penning some books?
I still have a hard time calling myself a writer. I can call myself an author, which I don't know if that's a distinction without a difference, or difference without a distinction. But no, I mean, I read really good writers, and like to. I don't know. I feel very embarrassed to put myself in the category of a writer, because I can only write books about that which I do every day, which is teach martial arts. If you ask me to actually write a story or whatever, it would be gobbledygook. I always thought it would be kind of nice to have my own books. I always appreciated Sifu Leung-Ting's books, but I thought that I'm not going to dare say that I could write a better book, but I did kind of feel like I could, because Sifu Leung-Ting's books intentionally would hide some information. And not like you can never give everything in a book anyway, but I know from conversations I had with him that he would intentionally hide some things. And then sometimes to piss off the European guys, he would intentionally mislead, just so that people would be like, wait a minute, we never learned this. And then they would have to go to him to learn it. It was very Machiavellian. And I thought, if I'm going to write a book, I wouldn't write a book that its intention was to cause or sow discord among the people who would read it. Sifu Leung-Ting is a very interesting character, but he does have some unfortunate Machiavellian traits, which I don't think serve the greater narrative about him as a person, because he is brilliant. And I think he sometimes presents himself in a way that will cause people to doubt that. But those are unforced errors on his part. So I thought, well, why don't I just write a book that could really be helpful? So I thought, I've written 5 books now. I'm not done. I still have more. I'm working on my Buji book right now. I'm going to work on a big tome about Wing Chun. Perhaps I may do some sparring or Chi Sao books, although I'm not sure about that. I just thought, I want to write the book that I wish I had when I started learning this subject. So my wooden dummy book is the book I wish I had when I started learning the wooden dummy. Like, not just have the form in there, but like, the context, the deeper meaning, a little bit of a background. And then I also wanted my books to be the kind of book that if you, for example, my latest book, the Wooden Dummy book, if you're starting to learn the Wooden Dummy, you would read it and it would give you some deeper context and a good push to get started, because you would, especially if you're from the WT line, and give you some ideas so you know a little bit more about what you're doing. So it's a little bit more layered. You're a little bit less going into it like as a blind person learning something without any guidance. You have a little bit of guidance. But then once you learn the wooden dummy form and have been doing it for a while, a reread of the book would show you something you missed the first time because you couldn't have seen it because you didn't know the form yet. And then for people who had been teaching Wing Chun for a while or come from my lineage and maybe don't have access to all the Chinese sayings and stuff, then an instructor would look at it and go, oh, now when I'm teaching it, if I do – you know, I can incorporate this so that it could also help people who are teaching it. So I tried ambitiously. Maybe I failed. I mean, it's not me to judge my books. It's the people who read them. Whether I've written a book that really serves those three markets, the person who's starting, the person who's done it, and the person who's been doing it for a while. Even if it's just that people in those three categories, they read the same book, but they may pick up on different things later based on their own understanding. So it's the kind of book, I call it a toilet book, a book you read while you're on the toilet.
Yes.
And you give it a reread, you just leave it there and you just pick up and read a couple pages and then you come back to it later. So I started those just basically as an idea to serve the Hong Kong side of Leung Ting Wing Chun with books that were less political. I'll be the first to admit, Sifu Leung Ting, for all of his brilliance, he is a very polarizing and political figure within the Wing Chun world. And you need only pick up any of his books. And if you're cued in on any of that stuff, you go, oh, here he's talking shit about this guy when he explains how he doesn't do Bong Sao this way. Here he's talking shit about one of his ex-students. Here he's talking shit about perhaps William Chan, right? And I go, like, if you ever see the old Dragnet TV shows, you know, it's just the facts, man. All right. Okay. People right. want to learn about Wing Chun. They want to learn the material. They don't need to inherit the sins of the father. So if I can do it with a little, and I'll admit, people could probably pick up on a couple things that I explain in there that might be geared because a certain way Wing Chun was presented. I want to create a counter narrative. So it's not to say you cannot completely avoid any kind of sub narratives even when you're just explaining the wooden dummy form, but it's not meant to hurt people's feelings the way other books have been written to hurt people's feelings. I want people to feel uplifted and feel like they learned something, even if they don't agree with it. I'm okay with people going, I don't like his wooden dummy form, but I like that one chapter he wrote about this. Okay, then I've done my job, all right? You don't yeah. need to do my form or how I do my form. But it's something, or even if someone says something, he makes an interesting point here, but I don't agree with it because of X, Y, Z, I'm fine with that. Because at least it got you thinking about something.
Yes.
And we never strengthen our own views and opinions by only reading things we agree with. And I think that it's a fallacy. It's a problem of human nature, but just to keep it in the Wing Chun world of people not wanting to read things that go against their own argument. Because I feel even if you are not convinced afterwards, your knowledge and your understanding is much deeper for having read the arguments that are against your own opinion. And I feel that you don't really fully understand or have a fully fleshed out take on anything from Bong Sao to why we have forms to why the form is arranged the way it is if you don't read stuff from people who disagree with you. Because that's how you sharpen your own knowledge, and that's also how you look deeper. Hey, this thing that this person says, which doesn't sound right, could it be right? And what is the thing there? And then you go into that rabbit hole and maybe – it forces you not to change wholesale, but to adjust your take on it. Or when you explain something, to add a caveat before you say it. So it's more measured. It's more educated. If you look at my bookshelf, I have all sorts of books from Wing Chun people that I don't necessarily agree at all with their take. But if I can explain what their view of Wing Chun is, even though it's not mine, and I do it not straw manning it or making fun of it, but say, you know, the Wong Sun Leung way of looking at the Buji form is XYZ. And I can do a couple of bullet points that any any decent Wong So Mun guy would say, yeah, yep, that's pretty much it. Then I can articulate a point even without agreeing with it. It strengthens how I view it and how I teach it. And so I would strongly suggest people get a little uncomfortable and out of their echo chambers and read things that they disagree with, or maybe they're not sure if they're going to like or not, because you can still learn perhaps more from that than simply reading and consuming news and information that agrees with your narrative.
Awesome. I only have a few more questions, Owen.
Sure.
And I want to, we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back. I got a whole nother okay. mile over here. So just know that you're coming back.
Okay. No problem.
You're a papa.
And I am.
And a pretty proud papa.
Yeah.
How do you run a successful school and still feel like you're being the best father that you can be? Because I know you, that's something that you, I know you try to do, and you echo it on your show. So if you could give us a little bit.
It's actually interesting you asked that question, because I guess, you guys will get a little bit of an exclusive something, because I don't really talk about my personal life that much. Occasionally you see my daughters on the show doing the gymnastics and doing the leg stuff or whatever, but
they're great.
The truth is the last couple of years of my life have been very difficult, because I've been in kind of a lengthy divorce from the mother of my daughters. And it's been really difficult, actually, to be quite honest. And without my students and my school and my Wing Chun practice and the podcast and everything, I think it would be extremely difficult. My take on being a dad has changed quite a bit, because now, I have the girls half the time. I don't have them all the time. But it's interesting, because it's worked out into a system, I suppose, of time management that is allowing me to be a lot more present as their father. I mean, I was always a very active and engaged dad, but I think I'm now even more so. And because of the parenting plan, I have them it's a 2-2-4 split. So I have them for 2 days. She has them for 2 days. I have them for 4. And then 2-2, she has them for 4. So what it does is it mixes these like long and short intervals where we have the kids. And it allows me to schedule my work around the days that I have the kids. So no matter how the schedule works, I never have them on Monday and Tuesday. So guess what days I do the most teaching at City Wing Chun? Mondays and Tuesdays. So from morning to night, Mondays and Tuesdays, I'm doing stuff for the school in the morning. I'm doing marketing stuff. I'm setting my posts. I'm teaching my classes online. I go to the school. I teach my classes there. I teach private lessons all day. The next day, Wednesday and Thursday, I have the girls while they're at school. I do the stuff for my school, emails, answering this while they're at school. And when they're off, all my time is for them. Hmm. I don't have to go to a lesson. I don't have a seminar scheduled. So, and that was something I wasn't able to do when we all lived together, because when you live together, you're just there. You come home, you work. Okay. I'm maybe a little too tired to do much. I'll play with them a little bit, and then I'll kind of slump. But now, because I know in advance when I'm going to have them, I can like plan out all my stuff. When I do my big seminars, I do it on weekends when I don't have the girls. So the following weekend when I have them, daddy's not teaching a seminar. Daddy doesn't have to go somewhere to teach or do this or whatever, right? So it's kind of weird, but this very difficult life change that I've been dealing with for the last 2 years has, in my opinion, allowed me to be much more present as a father, because I now I know the days that I have them. I can plan ahead. I can say, okay, so on this day, we're going to go out and we're going to do this together, or we're going to go and go to a movie and do this, rather than when they're there all the time. You take the time you have with them for granted. And as I get older, any parent knows seeing your kids grow is so bittersweet, because they mature. They learn more about the world. You're preparing them for the world, which is your job. but you also want them to stay small. You want them to be young. You want them to always, you know, daddy and hold on to you and all this kind of stuff. And my new life situation has allowed me to be, not to kind of harp on this thing, but to be more present, to realize that what we worry about for their future is taking away from the time we spend with them now. And the time we spend with them now is all we have. And if I can eliminate all of this kind of stress about, am I, you know, what is the next thing I have to do? You know, what do I have to set up for them? What do I have to get ready? And I can just plan it and it doesn't interfere with my work, because I have them on the days when I don't work, I can spend more time with them. I mean, for the first time, I know like all the, you know, the different squishmallows that they're into right now and the different, you know, these squishy pillows and the different things.
Yeah.
So when I see them, I know which ones they like and then I get them for them, because 4 years ago, I wouldn't know exactly like what is the thing that they're into. Like I know they're kind of into this thing, but I wouldn't know the details of it. And now sure. I can like know more of the details of these things. So, what is basically a very difficult time in my life, you know, the separation with their mother, has ended up making me feel a better about myself as a father, which is, I suppose when I'm no longer around, my students, I suppose, will look at me one way because I taught them or whatever. But the thing that matters the most is how my daughters view me. And, you know, did I do a good job? Was I there? Did I give them the things that I need? You know, my eldest now is 11 years old. So she's getting into like some preteen stuff or whatever. And, I recently watched The Shining with her and she was like, Dad, it's a great movie, but it's not really that scary. And I was like, wow, I was scared shitless when I saw The Shining.
Right? Yeah. Totally.
And, yeah. But I use these movies to, like, we saw Stand By Me and, you know, they loved it. And I use it like exposing them to the classics I grew up with, but going like, see this type of person. And I'll say like, do you trust this person? Or when that person said that, do you think they're trying to fool this person or whatever, so that I engage them while we watch the movie? Because I have two girls and girls need to be prepared to deal with all sorts of things that come in this Absolutely. World and things that are going to be very unfair to them and people trying to trick them and deceive them. So I can do that now in a way that was harder for me to do 2 years ago. So that is how I now have balance. I have a schedule that allows me to be a better dad than before. And while I wouldn't Good. Necessarily want to go through all this stuff that I've gone through, I think I've turned those lemons into pretty good lemonade.
Good on you.
That's Susan. Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a podcast that Owen and I were on about 5 or 6 months ago. It's a pretty cool podcast. You might know one of the guys there that does it. But there's these other two ding-dongs in this podcast. Could you tell us what started the KFG podcast?
like I talked about at the beginning, you know, after Big Sean passed, I have to say how grateful I am to Big Sean, because the Dudes of Kung Fu podcast was his idea. His son John was getting into podcasting. And his son John was like, hey, Dad, you know, you would be great on a podcast, right? Because Sean he was so like, you know, his New York way of doing things. I mean, he was built for podcasting. I mean, I really lament. There's so many things I would like to talk to him now about. And you know, if we had stopped doing Dudes, I mean, he would have been a regular guest on Kung Fu Genius, if you were still around. It would have been
perfect. His voice was so great and unique too. You know, I love hearing, because you believe it or not, compared to Big Sean's, he has that sweet, cool, raspy, unique voice of his.
Yeah.
And hearing you two talk was, I'm like, these guys are perfect. I loved it.
Yeah. And he asked me, he says, you know, I remember when he was like, hey, you know, my son John says I should do a podcast, but I don't want to do a podcast by myself. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember his exact words, but it was something like, yeah, but I can't imagine doing the podcast with anyone but you. And like, do you want to try it? And I was like, yeah, I think that'd be kind of fun. And then, so we did it and I ended up really enjoying it because, these are the kind of conversations that I think, are interesting for people like who do Wing Chun or Jeet Kune Do, but also I want people to maybe be exposed to a different take on things, maybe a little less tribal, a little bit more focused on, you know, forming good, solid opinions and thought processes about the stuff that we think about and maybe what's important and what's not important. And when Big Sean passed, I was like, I didn't want to continue Dudes with getting, yeah. I didn't want to get another co-host. Because who is going to replace Big Sean Madigan? Any iteration of Dudes of Kung Fu with someone else there would not be the same. The audience would know it and I would know it. And also it would be unfair to whoever would have been my new podcast co-host because whoever I would have picked would have been brilliant. I would have really picked someone who was really, really good. But no matter how brilliant they would not have been Sean. That would have been the thing that they would always be compared to unfairly so. And that person would not be able to shine because they would have been some like replacement for someone else. And it wouldn't have been fair to them. So I decided not to do that. And then I thought, but I still kind of like doing a podcast. And then I thought, well, we did the Wing Chun Jeet Kune Do chat. All right. Obviously, I'm more of a Wing Chun guy than, you know, a JKD guy, but I'm a big Bruce Lee nerd. And the interesting thing about Sean is Sean, and he would say this on the podcast, he goes, I'm a JKD guy. I'm not a Bruce Lee guy. And so, you know, he would even sometimes like, you know, like when we were talking, when I would mention some Bruce Lee movies, he's like, is that the one where he's in the yellow tracksuit? I'm like, Jesus Christ, Sean, you're a JKD guy and you don't even know which. He only made four movies, man. Like, come on. And so I realized like, okay, I can still talk about the Wing Chun stuff, but I can also talk about this Bruce Lee stuff because this is also something that fascinates me quite a bit. Him as an icon, as an actor, as a martial artist, as the founder of his own style, as like a unique, someone unique to our pop culture. I can talk a lot about Bruce Lee. And I thought, okay, I can do that. I also really like Kung Fu movies and Hong Kong culture. And those were not, you know, outside of its relevance to Wing Chun, those were not really things I talked too much with about Sean. We'd mention movies sometimes, but like I can drone on and on about Shaw Brothers and Golden Harvest and Lau Kha Leung's choreography versus Sammo Hung's choreography. I can go into like those rabbit holes. So I thought, okay, the podcast I would do would be a little bit more eclectic in terms of the topic, although it's becoming more and more Wing Chun and Bruce Lee. Like it's becoming more and more into like these two topics, right? And I thought, okay, maybe instead of trying to find another martial arts guy, because maybe even if I have my own podcast, people might still think, yeah, but this is him trying to do the same shtick that they did with Sean. I need to find the guy who's my perfect foil. You know, I can get kind of heady and kind of, you know, detail oriented with dates and facts. So I need the guy who's not that guy, the guy who's almost the voice for the audience, which is like, huh? Like when I say something and Dre is that voice. I knew Dre would be funny. And, you know, it took us a little while to kind of get the podcast mix. You know, the first few podcasts, it was like we were still kind of like, you know, it takes a little while before you get that perfect mixture. But I knew Dre was hilarious because he would come over my house and we'd watch Kung Fu movies and I'd be watching it. And it was almost like Mystery Science Theater. The stuff that he would say was so funny. And like, cause he would be looking at it. Like he didn't know who this actor was or who this stuntman was or whatever. And he would just say something and I would be cracking up and I'd be like, Dre, dude, we got to do something. Like we got to do commentaries. Record them and people can play them while they watch these movies or something. And then when I thought about doing my own podcast, I thought, let me just do it with Dre because he'd be the guy who and Dre is a Wing Chun Sifu. He's a very skilled Wing Chun practitioner and he's very much into it, but he's not the guy who's going to tell you about Yip Man's history in the 1950s. He's not going to tell you. He's not the guy who necessarily is interested in all that stuff. So I think it would be the perfect board for me to bounce off of, right? And he says such funny stuff. And of course, we play up the whole I get annoyed with him thing. I never get annoyed with Dre. I love him to death. But we play it up for people.
It's great. It's great.
It's funny, you know, this kind of thing, right? And then Mikey, his specialty is doing sound. I mean, he does that for clubs and stuff like that. And when I mentioned my podcast, he's like, hey, do you need someone to help like do the sound stuff for you while you do it so you and Dre don't have to worry about it? And I was like, oh man, that would be a huge help. And then, so he was there right from the beginning, just, you know, making sure he could hear us and hit record on the mic because, John Madigan used to do that stuff for Dudes. He would cut the episodes and put the intro and do all that stuff. And then, so, I would edit the early episodes of Kung Fu Genius until, one of our Ohio instructors, Andrew Lin, started doing that for us. And then because Mikey was just the guy making sure that we could be heard the entire episode.
So good.
But more and more we would incorporate him. And when we found out that he is really salty about Phil Collins, that was the end of it. You know, that one episode, he didn't know we were going to do that when we found out how much he hated Phil Collins. And then I told Dre, I said, Dre, I'm going to work in the titles to Phil Collins songs as if it's like normal things, but we're not going to tell Mikey. So that episode where I'm going like, you know, like, we're talking about Yip Man. It's like, I don't know, Dre, like, but I can really feel it coming in the air of the night, you know? Wait, hold on. Right. And he realizes after a while, well, he had no idea. Right. And it's like, man, just, you know, I can't dance. And we would just go, but he had no idea. I listed all, like, if you see that episode, I had a piece of paper in front of me that just had all these Phil Collins titles. And I just like, just wedged them in there. And then from then it was like, you know, he's really funny and Mikey's great. He's got great takes. And when Dre couldn't come in and he would guest host, the episode dynamics would be really different, but I really like those episodes because Mikey wasn't trying to like, you know, be goofy the way Dre does. He would ask me like deeper, more probing questions.
Yep.
And the nature of those episodes were a little bit different. And I like having, you know, sometimes it's Mikey, sometimes it's Dre. And what I realize is now there's like a team Dre and a team Mikey. They're people who absolutely can't, when Mikey is the co-host, people get pissed. And then there's some people like, I don't like Dre, he's too goofy. Can you get Mikey back there? And it's so funny to see how like, this tribalization, even among people who listen to my podcast, it just exists and there's nothing you can do about it. But those two dudes are so funny. We recorded something. We haven't edited yet, but we watched the movie New York Ninja. I don't know if you know about this movie.
No, sounds like a must see.
So do yourself a favor, go on YouTube. I don't know if you know Red Letter Media. They do like lots of movie reviews and stuff online. Red Letter Media did a video on New York Ninja. New York Ninja was a low budget ninja movie made in the 80s in New York that never got finished because it was kind of a trash fire and they found it and it had no sound and they edited it not knowing what the story was and they redubbed it and it is the most low budget nonsense. We watch it. It's insane. So I don't know if you have the Paramount app, but if you have the Paramount app, you can actually watch New York Ninja on Paramount and you're welcome in advance. All right. It is insane. so we did an episode where we just like, we have the cameras there. We watch it. We're just laughing and we almost want to cut it together like a Red Letter Media episode, but we haven't done it yet. So I want to do more kind of funny things with these guys off the beaten path of what we normally do on the podcast. I'm going to do more topic episodes. In addition to the podcast, I'm also going to do more one-offs where it's just me talking to the camera for 10 minutes about a topic or something
like
that.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So I want to have you back on because I want to have a long, healthy discussion. And if people haven't checked out the Kung Fu Genius podcast, they need to because
definitely.
I honestly think that not only are you, not only is the show hilarious, but you have maybe some of the most adult takes on being a huge Bruce Lee fan as well as a martial artist. So the next time you're on, I want the Bruce Lee stuff. I also would love you to talk about Chan Chi Man, Chan Chi Man. And
sure.
There's just so many other topics because, you know, Owen and I are both just, you know, constant listeners. But as you're on the way out, and we're going to include this in our show notes, we always do. Tell us about City Wing Chun. You know, you've got an online platform for teaching Sifu. You've got your books. If people are interested in training your method of Wing Chun, how would they get a hold of you? What would they do? Those kind of things.
Sure. The website for my association, which is kind of for outside of New York for everything, is citywingchun.com. But I spell Chun T is in Thomas, S-U-N. So it's not C-H-U-N. So it's all one word, city, W-I-N-G-T-S-U-N.com. So citywingchun.com. If you go there, my online shop is there. So all my books are there. I have online tutorials like the Su Nung Tao Cham Ki Byuji Wooden Dummy Form. If you want to learn those things, you can get access online to those videos. In addition to all my books and stuff like that, the other thing we're doing, which was very successful last year, is in August, I have a Hong Kong trip where I basically yes. lead a tour of Hong Kong. It's like a 7-day trip. You can look at the people who were there last year and ask them if they liked it. If you go to Hong Kong once, go to Hong Kong with a Kung Fu genius. I show you Wing Chun stuff, Kung Fu stuff, martial arts movie stuff, Bruce Lee stuff. And every day we have it's packed from morning to night with events. There's plenty of fun nightlife and sightseeing and Kung Fu. It's even if people are not totally into Kung Fu, it's a pretty awesome way to come to Hong Kong. So you can go there and in the menu bar, you said that Hong Kong trip and you guys can sign up. And I would love for you guys to come with me to Hong Kong, this year in August. And yeah, like I said, all my books and stuff are there. If you are interested in training in New York with me, you can get the information through that same website, or you can go to citywt.com, which is slightly shorter. CityWT, that is my school in New York. So like you can go there and sign up directly to do classes. We have, for people who are local to New York, we have an offer where you can come in and try it out for free for a week. And, oh, wow. But you got to sign
That's
up
fantastic.
And you got to sign up on the website for that. And then if you are a fan of the podcast, you can go to YouTube and it's, youtube.com/thekungfugenius. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's @thekungfugenius. On Facebook, it's also @thekungfugenius. So whether Facebook or Instagram, you can follow us there. And for people who want to support us, patreon.com/thekungfugenius. If you go for $5 a month, you get access to episodes early. We have all sorts of cool stuff there. And it's the only place where people can actually write in the questions that I will talk about on the podcast itself. So, you know, for as little as $5 a month, you can support the podcast and get your questions answered on the podcast. And it's a direct line to talk to me, ask me all sorts of things and stuff like that. On our website, if people want to do online training with me, especially for people who are already instructors, so they don't have to learn like how to throw a punch. I can do online training to help people refine the curriculums in their school, to help people, expand their curriculum. How do they teach certain Wing Chun concepts versus non-Wing Chun and help, I help a lot of instructors improve how they teach in their own school. So online private training is not necessarily for someone learning from day one, but for instructors, it's a great way to get a little more depth and maybe get an outside take as to how they could present the information to their students. So all of that stuff is available through those channels. And yeah, would love to, you know, if you guys are on Instagram or whatever, shoot me a message, let me know. And yeah, I love interacting with people who are into the stuff that I do.
Is there any last thoughts that you would like? Because again, we're going to have you on because I've got so many more questions. But is there any last thoughts that you would like to have to share with the audience about absolutely anything, Sifu?
Wow, that's a very open-ended question. I would say that for your own personal practice is to be gentle with yourself, because it's very easy to allow negative self-talk about not being where you want to be, not being as fit as you would like to be, not being at a certain level, to ruin your enjoyment of what you're doing in the moment. And, as I've said multiple times, the present moment, it's all you got. Yeah.
Thank you, Sifu.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It's been great.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Thank you so much. I had a blast.
Have a blessed day, my friend.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.